Nobody can be too Jewish.
That's exactly it. You got it.
Shalom, and welcome to the Two Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together today of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning on Two Jewish is Ilana Kershon, the author of If All the Seas Were Ink, a remarkable memoir about the Talmud. We'll also have visits from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price, our two Jewish Mevina on Israel, Oshrat Barel, and our new Shin Chinim, Chaim Denachi, and Tamir Shakuri, and our Maven on Jewish Education, John Ben Asher. Please email your comments to us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at twojewishradio.com. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Two Jewish.
Shalom. We are now in the last 2 weeks of Elul, the final month of the Jewish calendar, which means that Rosh Hashanah, the Jewish New Year, first of the High Holy Days, is just 10 days away, beginning the evening of September 20th. This is the time of year in Jewish tradition when we examine our lives over the past year, think about how we've lived, decide how we can improve and change in the coming 57-78 year. Change is always challenging, even when it is for the better. Generally speaking, it's always easier to do the same things over again the same way. We already know how to do what we have already done, after all, and even if the results aren't fulfilling or meaningful, they are predictable. That's why so many of us find it nearly impossible to make significant changes in our personal lives and conduct. We somehow think that if we just keep doing what we have been doing, we will succeed this time around. In response, the great Jewish physicist Albert Einstein defined insanity as doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. And isn't that what most of us choose to do? As we move into the home stretch of 5777 on the Jewish calendar, the danger is that we will continue to do what we've always done, and arrive next year at Rosh Hashanah to discover we've made the same mistakes and again failed to improve our lives. If that proves to be the case, we will have wasted the opportunity to make our lives better, holier, more meaningful. We will have failed in our essential purpose in life. This very special time of year gives us a chance to choose to live better, more sacred, more valuable lives. All that we need to do is look in the mirror honestly and see reflected there someone who has the capacity to become more than he or she was over the last 12 months. That someone is you. And you are the one who has to act to make that happen. The first step in this season of the year is to apologize to anyone you've offended or hurt this past year. Try it today. Call someone you should have called recently, or somebody you ignored when they needed you. Find a person you wronged and try to make it up to them. Reach out, do something caring for someone who cannot benefit you. It's all part of the process we call tshuva. In Judaism, return or repentance. It's a great process, a powerful, if sometimes challenging one, and it can lead to real growth and return. And it is the best, and sometimes the only way, to make our lives better in this coming Jewish year. To play us in this morning for these coming days of awe, here's a fun Rosh Hashanah song on that theme of tshuva by 613. It's called Starting Over.
It's Rosh Hashanah. All the time keeps ticking on. Just another year of moments come and gone. We're that much older, but are we wiser? Have our hearts grown that much colder? Have we ceased to do our part? 'Cause I'm starting over. I'm looking back. 'Cause I've done things that I'm not proud of. In this year we're coming out of. Now's the time for introspection. Time to forge a new direction. Decide who I wanna be. A brand new year,
a brand new me, 'cause I'm starting over. Blow the shofar, sound the call for us to change. This year is over, we'll renew ourselves again. The gates are open, I'll repent and swallow pride, and I'm hoping it's enough to be inscribed. I'm starting over, I'm looking back, 'cause I've done things that I'm not proud of. In this year we're coming out of, now's the time for introspection, time to forge a new direction, decide who I wanna be. A brand new year, a brand new me, I'm starting over, I'm moving past, I'm putting all my sins behind me. The errors of old ways won't find me. Let's put our whole selves in this, let's return and seek forgiveness, be what it means to be a Jew.
That was Starting Over by the group 613 for the coming Jewish High Holy Days, beginning with Rosh Hashanah, September 20th, 21st, and 22nd. Come to a temple, particularly my own Temple Emmanuel here in Tucson, Arizona, and arrange to be there. Our guest this morning, Ilana Kershon, has written an extraordinary book, combining her daily Talmud study with her own life experiences over 7.5 years. It's called If All the Seas Were Ink, and it's remarkable. Find out how it happened and what it means when we return in a moment here on Too Jewish.
Are you curious? Well, now we have everything you wanted to know about Judaism, but we're afraid to ask. Temple Emmanuel's famous Taste of Judaism program, now in its 18th year, offers an exploration of Judaism in 3 2-hour sessions on Jewish spirituality, values, and community, taught by our rabbis. This free introductory class is immensely popular in Southern Arizona. 6,000 students have enjoyed Taste to date, and you can too. Call 327-4501 for more information and register today. Taste of Judaism is an exciting opportunity to learn more about Jewish culture, history, rituals, and practice. Rediscover your roots, or simply satisfy your curiosity about Judaism. Classes are free and open to all, and we feed you too. We have daytime and evening classes in Central and Northwest Tucson, and this year also in Green Valley. Taste of Judaism starts soon, so don't miss it. Again, it's free with no fees or obligations, but space is limited and pre-registration is required. Call Temple Emmanuel at 327-4501 or email temple@tetucson.org. Call 520-327-4501 for a fun way to learn about Judaism.
My name is John Ben Asher, and I'm the head of school at the Tucson Hebrew Academy. Tucson Hebrew Academy is a pluralistic kindergarten through 8th grade Jewish day school. We foster educational excellence through an interdisciplinary, integrated general studies and Judaic curriculum. We teach our students to apply Jewish values and learning to everyday life, enabling them to make their community and the world a better place. Our engaging, talented faculty ensure a rigorous, interactive, supportive learning environment. From the early years through comprehensive high school prep, children thrive in THA's uniquely enriching educational community and culture. Our 41-year tradition of excellence continues to produce highly skilled, critical, and creative thinking students with a strong moral compass and deep understanding of Jewish identity, traditions, and values, well prepared for the challenges to come. Tucson Hebrew Academy, thaaz.org, 529-3888.
We are delighted to welcome to Jewish our guest this morning. Ilana Kershon is the author of the extraordinary new book, If All the Seas Were Ink. I guess it could be described as a bibliomemoir, both a description of a remarkable experience of studying Talmud and kind of paralleled along the lines of her own life story. Tell us how you decided to write All the Seas Were Ink, or was it a decision initially?
Well, I never really set out to write a memoir about the Talmud. When I started learning Talmud about 10 years ago, I guess it was more of a coping mechanism than anything else. At the time, I was going through a really rough period. I was getting divorced. I was living in Jerusalem, thousands of miles from my family and closest friends. I was awfully depressed. Time seemed to stretch ahead of me inexorably, and I felt like with every passing day, I was just going to get one day older. The only thing that got me out of bed in the mornings was that I had a friend I used to go jogging with at 6 a.m., and one morning she mentioned to me that she'd begun learning Daf Yomi, Hebrew for daily page of the Talmud. I was kind of surprised to hear this. My friend wasn't particularly religious, and I couldn't understand why she was interested in studying all that Talmud. The Babylonian Talmud is a vast corpus that consists of some 2,700 pages divided into 37 volumes known as tractates. Each of those tractates is comprised of several chapters. But then my friend looked at me and she said something I never forgot. She said, "Ilana, you're feeling completely stuck right now. Maybe if you learned one page of Talmud a day, then eventually a new chapter would begin for you." And I thought about that, and I thought about, wow, if every day I learn one page of Talmud, then with every passing day, I wouldn't just be one day older, I'd be one day wiser. This is actually the Jewish view of time. The rabbis teach in Pirkei Avot, a collection of wise sayings from the ancient rabbis, that at age 5, one begins studying Torah. At age 10, one begins studying Mishnah, which is the oldest sections of the Talmud. At age 15, one begins studying Talmud. I was nearly twice the age stipulated in Pirkei Avot, but as we learn elsewhere in that text, if not now, when? And so I decided I would start learning and see if a commitment to learning a page of Talmud a day might pull me forwards like a treadmill. And so that's how it all began.
Yeah, it's fascinating because usually when people are in deeply depressed states, they want to study something, they look at mysticism, they might look at Musar if they're Jewishly inclined, they might go study some other religious tradition. Talmud is in some ways the most practical part of Judaism, the most hands-on. Was that helpful in and of itself?
Well, you know, that's what I initially thought, but what I discovered about the Talmud really surprised me, because in some sense it is practical, but unlike later works that followed from it, the Talmud is not a law code that tells Jews how to behave. It's more of a record of rabbinic conversations in which the questions are left open and unresolved. As I experienced it, the Talmud is a text for those who are living the questions rather than for those who have found the answers. And so I found myself drawn to Talmud at a time in my life where everything seemed uncertain. I was drawn into the rabbinic conversations. I found myself following the lines of the rabbi's arguments, adding my own voice into the conversation. And that voice, I guess, eventually became the germ of my book.
We will talk much more with Ilana Kershon. Her new book, remarkable book, is called If All the Seas Were Ink. Learn more about it and her when we come back in a moment here on Too Jewish.
The Tucson J has something for everyone. Open to all, the J serves the entire Tucson community with an enriching early childhood education and after-school J care program and robust state-of-the-art fitness center, arts and culture classes, sports and recreation, and much more. The J is not just a gym. We offer Jewish programs and holiday celebrations, concerts, lectures, and a beautiful sculpture garden and fine art gallery. The J provides a Hamish atmosphere steeped in Jewish identity and values. Stop by, take a tour, and see what we have to offer. The Tucson J, 3800 East River Road, or TucsonJCC.org.
Get into the spirit of Shabbat at the Tucson J's Senior Shabbat Luncheon this Friday, September 15th at 11 a.m. Come to the J's Fine Art Gallery at 11 for Shabbat Blessings and Songs with our Early Childhood Children. Featured program begins at 11:30, including a screening of the Let It Ripple film 30,000 Days, a 10-minute film exploring 3,000 years of questions about living a good life. Kosher lunch provided, advanced registration required. RSVP at TucsonJCC.org or by calling 520-299-3000. Don't forget, Senior Shabbat Luncheon this Friday, September 15th at 11 a.m. at the Tucson J at River and Dodge. Visit TucsonJCC.org. If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, a kvetch or a kvel, please email us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com or visit our website at twojewishradio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through our website, twojewishradio.com, streaming there or downloading us from the Apple iTunes Store's very popular Jewish podcasts.
We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
I've been talking the last couple of weeks about a trip you led as a 20-year-old of Ramah kids to Russia. And obviously, it's a few years back. This is the height of the Cold War. You met with Jewish community members there, and I guess because you came in on a bus, they didn't like go through all your stuff and confiscate all the Jewish items. But that was a different world then.
It was a very different world. And for the record, when I planned the trip and went to pay for it, I was 20. But when I actually executed the trip, I was 21.
Oh, 21. Right. Boy, right. That's old. Right. So, incredible. Leading 16-year-olds.
Right. So the first trip, we did enter by bus. We crossed all of Eastern Europe by bus, and there was virtually no customs at all. So we did bring in a lot of prayer books and Hebrew Bibles and stuff like that, and we managed to give them out without too much interference. The second year, we flew in directly to Moscow on British Airways, and the KGB clearly knew who was coming in from the name list, probably, and they went through everybody's stuff with a fine-tooth comb and really terrorized the kids. Took everything. We had nothing left to give away.
Everything Jewish, you mean?
Not only everything Jewish. I mean, some kids had, like, copies of their father's Playboy magazine or whatever, which was considered hardcore pornography by the Soviet authorities in those days. And it is a different world. I mean, Jews went to the Soviet Union in those days, either individually or on paid missions or in groups, with the main purpose of giving out bits of Jewish culture, whether it was a Talmud or a Siddur or a Chumash, whatever it was, and meeting with refuseniks and giving them encouragement and whatever. And Soviet policy, which changed over the years, long before the Soviet Union ended its inglorious existence, at that time, it was almost impossible to get out. And basically, you had to ransom yourself. If you got an invitation from an immediate family member living in Israel or whatever, you could begin a long, slow process, during which time you couldn't work, you couldn't legally earn any salary, any income at all, and you had to pay, sort of reimburse, theoretically, the Soviet government for your higher education. So a lot of Jews who left in those days, back in the 70s, say, were doctors, lawyers, professors, who had spent a long time in school. And the government put a price tag on their education and said, fine, when you pay us back for this, we'll let you go. And that was the first of many things that amounted to bribes. And sometimes, you know, a foreign government, like the government of Israel, or a philanthropic group in Israel, would pay the bribe in order to
liberate the refusenik.
Either liberate the refusenik or to acquire some talented, stellar person,
right,
you know, with
right,
a talent that could be useful. But it was, in a certain sense, trafficking human beings.
I remember the bumper stickers, don't buy Pepsi, Pepsi sells to Russia, Russia sells Jews, in that period of time. And there was, it was really a difficult period. There were millions of Jews living in the Soviet Union who,
right,
couldn't get out.
Essentially in captivity. Right. And there is a long Jewish tradition. I mean, I don't know where the tradition begins or where the mitzvah comes from, but ransoming the captives.
Right, Pidyon Shvuyim.
Right.
Right. It's a central mitzvah. It's
which in the Middle Ages, I mean, pirates captured Jews in the Mediterranean and imprisoned, yeah, them all over the Mediterranean. And Jewish communities would save them.
Yeah, actually,
by paying.
Right. I mean, it was a common practice. If you needed money, capture, take into prison the local rabbi and ransom him to the community. It's weird to see some of the same people running the Soviet Union now are so heavily involved in the KGB, like, you know, Vladimir Putin, for example.
Right, for example.
We will talk next week, Tom.
I look forward to it.
We are delighted to welcome the two Jewish, Chen Dinachi, who is one of our Shin Shinim, our representatives of Israel, the young people that come out now annually. This is the second time this has happened, replacing Bar and Leah, who were here last year. Chen, good morning. Boker Tov. Welcome to Two Jewish.
Boker Tov, Rabbi. Thanks for having me.
So kids are the same around the world, but they don't always have the same expectations. And we were talking about that earlier.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I don't know if you know that, but in Israel, kids, once they graduate high school, they have to go to the army for a mandatory service that lasts 2 or 3 years.
Two years for women and 3 years for men, more
yes,
or less, right?
Yes.
Although you can stay in longer and there's voluntary programs.
Yeah, but once you stay longer, it's like a job, you get paid. But the mandatory service is 2 years for women and 3 years for men.
For women, is it mandatory or is it just something that most women do?
It is mandatory. I feel like there are ways to get out of it, but it's mandatory and everyone does it.
As I understand it, Israeli teens are often expected to do service and not get paid for it. Does that sound, is that right?
Okay, so I'll explain the military kind of framework a little better. So kids graduate from high school. Once they're in high school, they do tests to see which place in the army they will fit best.
And there's like three times in the year when they can go into the army, something like that?
Yeah, there's three recruitment days. But most jobs, practically all of them, do get a certain amount of money. But it's really small and it's like peanuts. It's not really something
just
you can...
Just kind of a little minimal stipend.
It's
right.
A lot more than minimum.
Okay, a small stipend.
Yeah. But I feel like it gives you a lot. I feel like no kid wants to get out of it. Most kids are really excited for their army service because as you grow up, soldiers have been protecting you your entire life. And I feel like in Israel, it's something that you feel because it's not... We're not very in peace with all of our neighbors. So we really feel
I
the
have
protection.
Noticed that. I think a few people have noticed that fact.
Might have, yeah. So I think that as a kid, you really appreciate the people who protect you. And as you grow up, you want to take part in that and protect other people, which I think is good because it gives you, as a teen, a sense of responsibility and commitment to your country.
So while lots of 18-year-olds are excited to go into the military, this Shnat Shirut, this additional year before, it's not like it takes off of your military service time. Why did you decide to take that year this year instead of going directly into the military, which you could have done?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, I think this is a year, that age, 18, is something I can do a lot with. And I don't think the army is going anywhere. And I feel like this year is...
Unfortunately, that requirement is still going to be there. That necessity will still be there in Israel.
It will be. And I just feel like this is an amazing opportunity for me to make an effort. And the next time I will have the opportunity to do something like that, to go live abroad for a year, will be when I get older and I can get... a lot less people to relate to me, because right now I'm at that age where young people can relate to me and I still can sit down and have a conversation with people like yourself and learn a lot from them. So
old people like me, as you're saying.
No, that's not what I meant.
Chen, thanks so much. We appreciate it. We will talk soon.
Thank you.
We welcome our maven on Jewish education, John Ben Asher, head of the Tucson Hebrew Academy. Boker Tov, John.
Boker Tov, good morning.
Good morning, and it's almost time for Lashana Tova, a good year.
Yes, another one.
Oh my goodness, they keep coming. More than 5,700 and now 78 of them it'll be.
Pretty remarkable count.
You know, as we approach the new year, the Jewish approach to new year, of course, is that of tshuva, of return, tzedakah, tefillah, but maybe it's also about learning.
For sure.
And let's talk about that a little bit, because we know repentance, prayer, charity.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's an interesting time for us, you know, because there is a solemnity and a seriousness and a bit of a heaviness to the high holidays period. But there's also a lot of joy and celebration. And underlying all that is the sense of renewal and restarting and this fresh beginning, which, you know, as Jews, we avail ourselves of a few times a year, which is, I think, psychologically, spiritually, emotionally, very good for us. And we just started a new year with school getting going, religious schools, Tucson Hebrew Academy, and of course, other traditional types of schools.
And adult education programming.
You name it. So that whole liftoff for starting the learning year has begun. And now, you know, now we're learning about the Jewish high holiday time. And
so how do you keep it from being too heavy? You know, I mean,
sure.
I love, you know, teaching every kid in our school how to blow the shofar and giving them opportunities to experience tactile things.
Yeah, yeah. And we talk a lot about how hands-on and experiential Judaism is. So doing Jewish things, celebrating the holidays, doing the rituals, the preparations, the ways to participate in the holidays are such an important component. And, you know, for children as well as adults, we've got to have the joy, the simcha in our simchot. I hope I said that correctly.
Yeah, that'll work. we talk about simcha shel mitzvah, right? The joy of fulfilling a commandment, not right. just the weight of it.
Right. So we use food, we use prayer, we use song, we use dance. But at the end of the high holiday period, we end up dancing around with the Torah.
Mm-hmm. Simchat Torah, and, of course.
Right, which is kind of be here soon too. So you mentioned blowing the shofar. So, you know, we've started that 30 days beforehand. Every morning, the shofar is blown. And so we have a whole school that comes together around half a dozen kids who voluntarily step up and blow the shofar each day. So that's very exciting and uplifting.
So when we explore how to change, of course, we have to learn about ourselves and we learn about what Jewish tradition tells us about it. So in a way, maybe this should we should add that into our prayers.
Yeah, well, you know, that concept of renewal and soul searching, something that when you learn about the holidays is a major component of that type of learning. And everybody learns in different ways. And, you know, over time we've talked about the appropriate developmental stages and what works for different kids. So we approach things in a developmentally appropriate way, and we help them not only know how to do the holiday and celebrate and appreciate the joy out of the holiday, but also how to reflect at the right age level on the right kinds of things.
Thanks, John. And slightly early still, Shana Tova Matuka, good and a sweet year.
Shana Tova to you and everyone.
When we come back here on Too Jewish, we'll hear the old Jewish joke of the week.
Hi, Doris. How are you?
Well, Carol, to be honest, now that I'm a little older, I can't get out as much as I'd like. I miss seeing people.
Why don't you come over to my place for lunch on us? The food's delicious. So many choices. And I have a special table with my friends every day. They'd love to have you join us.
Is there much to do there?
There are lots of activities every day. Mondays is Mahjong. Tuesdays, I do yoga. Wednesdays, we go shopping or to the museum or a restaurant. Thursdays, my exercise class. There are book groups, speakers, Shabbos services, concerts, a game room. I'm busier than ever.
Where do you live?
I'm at Handmaker. And the people are great. Please come over for lunch. You'll love it. It's even kosher. Just call me at 322-7035.
Handmaker Jewish Services for the Aging offers the full spectrum of quality senior living and post-hospital rehabilitative care. Call 322-7035. Handmaker for life. 322-7035.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor, your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. Rabbi Levine is shaking hands with his congregants after Shabbos services, as always, when Esther Glickman comes up to him in tears. Shabbat shalom, but what's bothering you so much, dear? Inquires the rabbi. Oh, Rabbi, I've got terrible news, replies Esther. What is it, Esther? My husband Leo passed away last night, Rabbi. Oh, Esther, the rabbi says, that's terrible. Tell me, Esther, did he have any last requests? Well, as a matter of fact, he did, Rabbi, Esther answers. What did he ask, Esther? Esther replies, he said, please, please, Esther, put down the gun. That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature of Too Jewish, just for you. You should live and be well. And now a word of Torah. In this week's double portions of Nitzavim and Vayelech, Moses is nearing the end of his leadership and his life. That gives a special poignancy to his message here. It is the last will and testament of Moshe Rabbeinu, Moses on management, if you will. What will Moses teach us about how to carry on after he is gone? How will our greatest leader pass the baton? Who will he give it to? The answer comes quickly, and it is a surprise. Here in Nitzavim Vayelech, Moses' great message is not that he is passing the mantle of control to Joshua. He does that. But his central teaching is that of leadership through empowerment. Each Israelite can grasp the central concepts of our contract with God and fulfill it. Every single Jew has the capacity to fulfill the Torah, our ethical commitment to God. We each have the responsibility to do so and the choice to carry it out or not. And that thousands of years old lesson has meaning today. What makes this particularly appropriate is that we are close to completing Deuteronomy, a text filled with ethical and moral laws for personal conduct. Give to the poor, the stranger, the orphan, and the widow. Treat employees with generosity and kindness and respect. Protect others against negligence. Deal honestly in business. Be gracious and moral in your treatment of animals. Reward loyalty. Do not seek to humiliate others. Live a life of commitment to your ideals. Keep your word and your vows. Of course, we don't have to actually do any of this, as Moses states so clearly in God's name here in Nitzavim Vayelech. We can choose to do otherwise, to act unethically. That will simply create a rotten world, institutions unworthy of respect, personal lives of deception and dishonor. We can choose not to support the needy, to ignore the homeless, to treat the stranger as alien, to leave those who teach Torah without the means of support to do their essential work. It is, after all, always our own choice. We are approaching the time for tshuva, return and repentance. Slichot is this coming Saturday night at Temple. Rosh Hashanah, week and a half away. And the message in our portion is clear. This Torah of ours is not too hard for us. It is not too far from us. It is here, now, close, in our hands. It is up to us to learn it, to live it, to do it. Not a bad final speech from Moses for this last Shabbat of the year. Not a bad lesson for the end of this year, for the beginning of this next new year. Not a bad message anytime. When we return on to Jewish, our guest, Ilana Kershon, author of the extraordinary new biblio-memoir about the Talmud, If All the Seas Were Ink, will explain why the Talmud is the perfect text to explore meaning and purpose in life today, how studying a Daf Yomi, a daily page of Talmud, transformed her life. Find out how when we return in a moment right here on Too Jewish.
The Tucson J has something for everyone. Open to all, the J serves the entire Tucson community with an enriching early childhood education and after-school J care program and robust state-of-the-art fitness center, arts and culture classes, sports and recreation, and much more. The J is not just a gym. We offer Jewish programs and holiday celebrations, concerts, lectures, and a beautiful sculpture garden and fine art gallery. The J provides a Hamish atmosphere steeped in Jewish identity and values. Stop by, take a tour, and see what we have to offer. The Tucson J, 3800 East River Road, or TucsonJCC.org.
Is your aging loved one unhappy and having a hard time adjusting to life around them? The TMC Geropsychiatric Center at Handmaker may be able to help. TMC Geropsych specializes in providing short-term, inpatient services for older adults experiencing behavioral health issues. Did you know that most people with depression get better when they seek help? With the right treatment, those with anxiety can overcome and learn to cope with their fears, and individuals with dementia can continue leading quality lives. Our team, led by a geriatric psychiatrist, brings expertise from disciplines across a variety of specialties to ensure your loved one receives the right diagnosis and treatment. For more information about our services, please call 324-4600. The TMC Geropsychiatric Center at Handmaker. Call 324-4600. Let's talk about how we can help.
We continue with our Two Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
Our brothers, our sons of Israel.
In an ugly story from Israel reflecting the controversy over the struggle for egalitarian prayer near the Kotel, the chief rabbi of Jerusalem, Shlomo Amar, a former Sephardic chief rabbi of Israel, called Reform Jews worse than Holocaust deniers because they reject halacha, traditional Jewish law. Last week, Amar referenced the Israeli Supreme Court decision handed down earlier, which called on the government to either reinstate the Western Wall Agreement with non-Orthodox groups or explain why it should not force the State of Israel to honor the deal. The hearing was an answer to a petition filed by Reform and Conservative movements in Israel and the Women of the Wall, calling for the implementation of an agreement to expand and upgrade the egalitarian prayer section at the southern end of the Western Wall in the Davidson Center area. The agreement puts the upgraded section on equal footing with single-sex sections. It would be run by a special committee with no input from the chief rabbinate. In June, the cabinet suspended the deal passed back in 2016 and negotiated by the Reform and Conservative movements, the Women of the Wall, the Jewish Agency for Israel, and the Israeli government with the ultra-Orthodox parties. The government's ultra-Orthodox coalition partners pressured Prime Minister Bibi Netanyahu to welch on the agreement. Shlomo Amar said, "They don't have Yom Kippur or Shabbat, but they want to pray at the Kotel. But no one should think they want to pray. They want to desecrate the holy. They are trying to deceive and say that extremist Haredim, ultra-Orthodox, invented separate prayer at the Western Wall," Amar said in a public lecture. "It's like Holocaust deniers. It's the same thing. They shout about Holocaust deniers in Iran, but they deny more than Holocaust deniers. In all the Mishnah and Gemara, there was a woman's section and a section for men in the temple. Did we invent this?" Amar also said. 10 months ago, in an interview with the Israel Hayom newspaper, Amar called Reform Jews evil, also in reference to the agreement to create an egalitarian prayer space at the Kotel, the Western Wall. It is supported by Jews everywhere else in the world, and actually throughout Israel, if you look at the polls. "There aren't many Reform in Israel," Amar said. "In recent years, they have been importing it, this culture. What they are doing is incitement. It is not a matter of personal distress. It's politics. I try to speak kindly, but I will not refrain from talking about Reform Jews or the abomination. I will not change what is written in the Torah." In that same interview, Amar called homosexuality an abomination, leading to protests outside of his Jerusalem office. Complaints were actually filed with police, characterizing what he said as incitement to murder against homosexuals. Amar said, "I call on them in warm and friendly language to leave their bad path. The Torah has forbidden homosexuality, calls it an abomination. It is a cult of abomination. It is clear it is abomination. The Torah punishes it with death. There is no such thing as having understanding or tolerance for this." Oy. In other news, it took nearly half a century, but there finally is an effective remembrance of the Israeli Olympic athletes brutally murdered by Palestinian terrorists in Munich, Germany back in 1972. 45 years after the murderous PLO attack on Israeli athletes in the Summer Olympics, a memorial dedicated to the victims opened in Munich last week. At the center of the monument are the biographies of the 11 Israeli athletes and the German police officer murdered in the attack. They're on panels with texts in German, Hebrew, and English. "We wanted to give the victims their identity back in the eyes of the public," said Bavarian Minister of Culture Ludwig Spandle of the site cut into a hillside in the former Olympic Park. The memorial cost over $2.5 million. Funding came from the state of Bavaria, the German federal government, the city of Munich, and the International Olympic Committee, which has long denied having any public acknowledgement of this awful act. Until this, the main memorials have been a sculpture and plaque. Plans for the new memorial were announced back in 2013. "This memorial attests to the bloodshed that soaked what should have been a joyous celebration of sport and camaraderie," Ron Lauder, head of the World Jewish Congress, said. Lauder addressed the opening ceremony together with German President Frank-Walter Steinmeier and Israeli President Reuven Rivlin. He said it was regrettable it took nearly half a century after the saddest moment in Olympic history to reach this point, but he lauded the German government for its role in this significant tribute. Lauder also said that life for Jews has changed for the better in Europe over the past 80 years, despite a recent increase in anti-Semitism and anti-Zionism. "We should also be encouraged by the fact that so many European governments are vigilant in their defense of Israel and of all their citizens, Jews and non-Jews alike." Charlotte Knobloch, head of the Jewish community of Upper Bavaria in Munich and former president of the Central Council of Jews in Germany, said the 1972 attack was not just against Israel, not just against Jews. It was an attack on all of us, on the Olympic idea, the vision of freedom and peace for all humans. She applauded an additional, as yet incomplete, element of the memorial, a school of democracy to be located in the tower of the Fürstenfeldbruck Airport, site of the fatally botched rescue attempt by the Germans. Knobloch thanked Spanley for his outstanding commitment to realizing a memorial that gives the victims a face, tells of their lives, remembers them, warns us never to take life, freedom, or democracy for granted. The memorial was designed by a team under the auspices of the Bavarian Ministry of Culture in consultation with family members of victims, the Consul General of Israel, experts from the concentration camp memorial at Flossenbürg, the Jewish Museum in Munich, and the Bavarian State Ministry for Political Education. Anke Spitzer, who was 26 years old when her husband was murdered by Arab terrorists in 1972 at Munich, her husband was the coach and fencing master, Andre Spitzer, said that she couldn't deal with the fact that her loving husband had been brutally murdered and no one regretted it. It took 45 years, but I don't regret the long and lonely journey that brought us to this day. This is what I wanted. And that's the Two Jewish News of Jews around the world. We welcome back to Two Jewish our guest this morning, Ilana Kershon. She's the author of the extraordinary book, If All the Seas Were Ink. It's about the Talmud. It's a personal memoir. It's a description of a Daf Yomi, studying a page of Talmud and completing the whole of the Talmud in, what was it, 7.5 years approximately?
Yeah.
You know, this is not a small book. It takes up a shelf in most of our libraries. You know, there's a famous quote about the Talmud. It says, you don't have to, it's like the ocean. You don't have to drink the whole thing. You just have to jump in and try to swim. But you kind of drank the whole thing, huh?
Yeah, I mean, as with an ocean, you can immerse yourself in Talmud at various levels. You can get by just barely skimming the surface, or you can swim underwater, or you can train for years as a deep sea diver and become an expert in all the flora and fauna in one particular corner of the ocean floor. I think Daf Yomi is, by its nature, rather superficial, because when you're moving forward at the impossible clip of a page a day, it's nearly impossible to stay afloat. So I guess in that sense, I've been fortunate to supplement my Daf Yomi study with translation work, which has enabled me to study more in depth, because I also work as a translator from Hebrew to English. I translate books about the Talmud. The Babylonian Talmud is often compared to an ocean or sea, I guess primarily because it's vastness and depth, but I think part of what I've been able to accomplish through Daf Yomi is to get a sense of just I guess this is a mixed metaphors, but the lay of the land, to get a sense of what's out there, what the terrain looks like, to see the forest, and then hopefully on further cycles, because I keep learning, to get a sense of the trees as well.
Is this your personal, I mean, was this Daf Yomi that it took 7.5 years? I'm struck by the relationship to the sabbatical. 7 years. Was that just accidental?
No, I mean, in the book, I trace how the Talmud followed me through the twists and turns my life took during that period. And in my life, it was a rather momentous period, from recovering from divorce to Aliyah, officially moving to Israel, dating, marriage, pregnancy, and motherhood. And all of this unfolded for me against the backdrop of my daily Talmud study. It reminds me of a line from T.S. Eliot's Love Song of J. Alfred Prufrock, I have measured out my life in coffee spoons. I guess I've measured out my life in Talmudic tractates. I remember periods from my late 20s and 30s based on what I was learning in Daf Yomi at the time. And I associate Talmudic passages with what was going on in my life when I learned them. When I first started learning, it was with tractate Yoma, which is Aramaic for Hayom, the day. It's about the most important day on the Jewish calendar, Yom Kippur.
Which is coming up soon, right? Go ahead.
Yes, coming up soon, indeed. Primarily, it's about the rituals of Yom Kippur performed when the temple was still standing in Jerusalem. At that time I was learning it, I was living alone in a small studio apartment in Jerusalem, and I felt myself identifying with the high priest who was sequestered for 7 days prior to Yom Kippur in a special chamber of the temple to prevent him from contracting impurity. As I read about all those temple rituals, it was often over dinner in my apartment, and I had to be careful not to drip tomato sauce for my pasta on discussions about the sprinkling of blood on the temple altar.
And then I moved on from Yom to Sukkah, which is about the holiday of Sukkot, also coming up on the heels of Yom Kippur. Sukkot is the tractate is named for the temporary homes that the Israelites lived in during their 40 years of wandering in the wilderness. And at the time, I was moving from one rental apartment to another, feeling like I, too, had no permanent home. So here, too, I found myself in the Talmud. During those early years of my Talmud study, Daf Yomi was very solitary. I would just listen to podcasts of the Daily Page and try to follow along with a volume of Talmud that I'd borrowed from my neighbor. Their rabbis teach in Tractate Eruvin in a line I love, "Hamahalech baderech ve'enimo levaya yasuk b'Torah," that if one is walking on his way and he has no companion, he should occupy himself with Torah. And that's really how I thought of Daf Yomi. Daf Yomi was my companion during what was otherwise a really lonely stretch of life. But a lot changed in that seven-year period. And as I soon learned, Daf Yomi is never really solitary because tens of thousands of people learn Daf Yomi worldwide. And they're all quite literally on the same page, following a schedule fixed in 1923 in Poland by the founder of Daf Yomi, Rabbi Meir Shapiro. So Daf Yomi, as I've come to think of it, is essentially the world's largest book club. So even when I was studying alone at home, yeah.
Yeah, and the Talmud might be the world's largest book, too, if you think about it that way, too.
Yes, yes, yes. And perhaps the world's most hyperlinked book as well, because right. Every page of Talmud assumes knowledge of all other pages, which means you can't really begin studying Talmud until you understand the entire Talmud. So right. There's no clear beginning and no clear end, and it's sort of, in that sense, a lifelong project. So in that sense, I guess the seven-year, the sabbatical, was somewhat arbitrary because you really never finish studying the Talmud.
Of course. Ilana, you are... you have unique skills. You are a translator. You have both Harvard and Cambridge on your CV. You're obviously extraordinarily bright. Is that necessary for someone to really succeed at doing Daf Yomi? Is that essential to really, I mean, people that don't have those kinds of linguistic skills, are they able to really master Talmud?
You know, when you ask that, it reminds me that I came to Talmud sort of through running. I'm also a runner because mm-hmm. It was my running partner who suggested that I start studying Talmud.
Right, as you said.
And in the same way, you know, it's what people often ask about a marathon. You know, can anyone really run a marathon? I've never run a marathon, but they say that anyone can if you train. Now, with Talmud, I think it's a little different. You can train a lot and access the Talmud on a very deep level, but there are so many resources out there for people who want to find a way into the text, even more so now on this cycle than when I started learning, because now there are even more translations of the Talmud into English. There's a new translation into Italian and other languages. And I really believe that everyone who engages with the Talmud brings his or her experiences to bear, whatever those life experiences are. The background that each individual brings to the text informs how he or she reads it, and the text reads differently in light of every person's experiences. I guess the best way to illustrate that, there's a story in the beginning of Tractate Chagiga about a sage, Rabbi Yoshua ben Chananya. Hmm. He once sent two of his students to go learn in another rabbi's Beit Midrash, in another rabbi's study house. And when his students came back, he said to them, "Okay, what did you learn? What can you teach me?" And his students looked at him like he was crazy, because after all, he was their teacher. What could they possibly teach him that he didn't already know? They said to him, "Talmidecha anu umeimecha anu shotim. We're your students. We drink from your waters. What can we teach you?" And Rabbi Joshua looked at his students and he said a very famous line, a line that's often quoted, "Ein beit midrash lelo chidush." There can be no encounter with Torah that doesn't produce new Torah. Anytime you engage with a text of our tradition, anytime any of us engages with a text of our tradition, we come up with new insights. It's so easy to think that because it's your first time reading a particular text, or because you have no background, because you've never opened a volume of Talmud, you can't possibly have anything original to share. But as someone who also teaches Talmud, I can say that it's often those who view the text through fresh eyes who make the most valuable contributions. As Rabbi Joshua knew, no two people read the text in exactly the same way, nor does any one person read the text the same way at two different points in his or her life. There's always something new to be discovered. At the end of that story, the students, ultimately, they do share what they learn. And Rabbi Yoshua responds by telling his students, he says to them, "You had this precious pearl of wisdom and you thought to deprive me of it." Hmm. I truly believe that all of us contain those precious pearls of wisdom, and the world should only merit to be enriched by the Torah that each of us have to contribute.
I'm going to ask one more question. You talked about rabbinic misogyny. Study of Talmud was always a male occupation. It's broadened recently, but here you are, a woman scholar, translator. You've translated books from actually very prominent authors. But Talmud has always been kind of a male prerogative. The rabbis you're studying are all men. In the Talmud, almost all the quotations are from men. Tell us about that experience a little bit.
I think that's part of what's so exciting for me about studying Talmud. For Jewish women like myself, we're encountering a text that for 1,500 years has been regarded primarily as the province of men, and as you say, is about men. Almost all the voices mentioned in the Talmud are male voices, not to mention, by the way, men who consider themselves experts in women's anatomy and physiology psychology.
Always.
Yes, and so as a modern reader of Talmud, I'm fascinated by how the rabbis' assumptions about women's attitudes towards marriage and sexuality and children, whether or not they resonate in light of the experiences of contemporary women, whether they still ring true in an era in which women can live independently, support themselves, in most parts of the world have children out of wedlock without undue social sanction. One of my favorite lines of the Talmud that appears actually several times, appears in multiple places, the rabbis say how important it is for a woman to be married and how much a woman desires to be married, so much so that she would get married even if her husband is the size of an ant. and why is that, what do they say? Because that way she knows, they say, that way she knows she won't lack for lentils in her pot. Now, when I first encountered that line, I was recently divorced, and I remember looking around at all my single friends and wondering, is that really true? Would a woman do anything to be married? I remember around that time a friend brought me a vase as a gift. And she said to me, well, Ilana, the next time you have a boyfriend and he brings you flowers, you can put them in this vase. And I said to myself, heck no, I'm going to use it for my lentils. I buy lentils by the kilo. And that, for me, that was really empowering. I actually copied out that line from the Talmud onto a piece of masking tape and I stuck it on the vase. She doesn't lack for lentils in her pot.
That's great.
And yeah.
I want to thank Ilana Kershon for a great visit. I feel like going a good deal longer. The book is called If All the Seas Were Ink. It's extraordinary. In addition to the book, you can find out more about her at Ilana, I-L-A-N-A, Kershon, K-U-R-S-H-A-N.com. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Rabbi.
When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest, get a final musical play out.
Are you curious? Well, now we have everything you wanted to know about Judaism, but we're afraid to ask. Temple Emmanuel's famous Taste of Judaism program, now in its 18th year, offers an exploration of Judaism in 3 2-hour sessions on Jewish spirituality, values, and community, taught by our rabbis. This free introductory class is immensely popular in Southern Arizona. 6,000 students have enjoyed Taste to date, and you can too. Call 327-4501 for more information and register today. Taste of Judaism is an exciting opportunity to learn more about Jewish culture, history, rituals, and practice. Rediscover your roots or simply satisfy your curiosity about Judaism. Classes are free and open to all, and we feed you too. We have daytime and evening classes in Central and Northwest Tucson, and this year also in Green Valley. Taste of Judaism starts soon, so don't miss it. Again, it's free with no fees or obligations, but space is limited and pre-registration is required. Call Temple Emmanuel at 327-4501 or email temple@tetucson.org. Call 520-327-4501 for a fun way to learn about Judaism.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in Southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next Sunday on Too Jewish. Our guest will be Yizhar Hess, our old friend and the one-time Too Jewish maven on Israel, now the head of Masorti, the conservative movement in Israel. And of course, listen to all of our podcasts on iTunes or at our twojewishradio.com website. Our playout this morning for the coming High Holy Days is Dip Your Apple by the Fountainheads from Israel. It's for Rosh Hashanah, beginning September 20th. My friends, may you have a Shavuot Tov, a good week, and a week, we pray, of peace.
A new year rising, a new beginning. Lift your head up, turn yourself around, the world is spinning. Feel the magic of a new day. Open your heart to a fresh start, send your fears away. You've made mistakes, you feel it. You got what it takes, believe it.
Sponsored by two Jewish radio programs, Tucson, Arizona.